pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Back at the home base this morning. We do appreciate you listening. And once again, thanks to Leader Stadhagen for putting us up yesterday. It was kind of it had its ebbs and flows yesterday. We talked about a lot of stuff, maybe not necessarily pertinent to this listening area, but as I say to this audience on a regular basis, thank you for indulging me on some of that stuff. Coming up today in about a half hour, we're going to do Makeup with Joey Clark, typically on Wednesdays, but he's agreed to move his time from yesterday to today. That's in a half hour. He's from News Talk 93.1. Hosts a show called News and Views in the afternoon. Also, April Marie Fogle from 1819 News. And Greg Davis, AlCap, and he has a radio show in Birmingham called Priority Talk. But he and I were talking yesterday at the State House, and there is a gambling bill out there. Now, I don't think this is going to happen, but it is entirely possible. A local bill brought by Minority Leader Bobby Singleton that would allow what they call historic horse racing or whatever, which is essentially just a way to get slot machines up and running in Greene County. It passed in the Senate. Now, most of the lawmakers abstained because it was a local bill. That's typically what happens. But the House has it. Now, according to Greg Davis, they could substitute something more comprehensive and try to pass it that way. Like I said, I don't think that's going to happen, but it at least is something that we need to be aware of. So I asked him to come on and kind of walk us through what they could do there. In the meantime, you want to get in touch with the program, Mallory Piping, text line 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with me, your show host. So a lot of buzz out there this morning, and I don't think it's much of a secret. Senator Tommy Tuberville laying the groundwork for a gubernatorial run. That seems to be what's in the air. Last night they had the Mississippi-Alabama softball game, and a lot of lawmakers and lobbyists go to that stuff. Kind of mining for data there for me, information. And it sounds like it's going to happen, guys. Expect an announcement in May is what the Hot Stove League seems to think. So if that's true, and it remains to be seen, but it's becoming more and more evident that it probably will be. We're going to have a Senate race in 26. Because I think the gubernatorial race will be over. Maybe I'm wrong, and you guys can tell me on the text line, but does anybody lay a glove on Tommy Tuberville in a gubernatorial election? And I don't see how. Once he announces he is the front runner, he is the prohibitive front runner, and it's hard to see how even Will Ainsworth, who I would think, if he ran, would be the front runner, makes a race out of it. And if they tried, it'd be very expensive and probably very very casualty heavy. So just between you and I, guys, it sounds like it's likely to happen probably officially in May sometime. But we'll see. Other things, I did want to mention this. Yesterday, Cash Patel in Alabama up in Huntsville, which is probably a sign, alongside him were Tuberville and Katie Britt. You're going to see more and more of an FBI presence in Alabama. I think this is going to be one of the makings of the Trump presidency. We're trying to decentralized the so-called deep state. and moving people around. Now, look, Huntsville, it's not Waco, Texas. But it is, it is probably going to be a, probably more of what you voted for. It's not going to change the FBI culturally. But it is, it's sort of getting more of the presence out of D.C., out of the Beltway, out of the political realm, and spread around, I think is good for democracy. Good for democracy, as they say. So I'm still like, it's just allergy season, and it's hard for me to do my democracy voice. Some other things. The session's winding down in Montgomery. The Birmingham Waterworks bill we were talking about yesterday with Representative Cards. As I said, significant piece of legislation in my mind, because they've been trying to do it for years, but it's kind of a representation of the problem with the Alabama Senate, where you have a Republican supermajority. You have a corrupt water board. It's been corrupt for probably more than a decade, if not longer. And a couple of lawmakers who hold the entire state house hostage every time the issue is brought up. And then last Thursday, as we saw, the cloture calendar and a lot of bills moving through the Alabama legislature that had been held up by these Democrats, I think was a warning shot. Hey, you better come to the table and negotiate. Well, they came to the table and negotiated something last night. Remains to be seen what it is. But that is the buzz there also was the Birmingham Waterworks, and they got a very high-powered, very expensive lobbying firm, Fine Getty, working on a bill that's a little more favorable for the city of Birmingham. See, you know, they had these guys on the ropes, and they were about to move, and it sounded like they came to some kind of negotiated settlement. The other big one to watch is this porn filter bill. You're like, well, what the hell's a porn filter? So what the state of Alabama is trying to do, our friend Clyde Chambliss, is require some of these smart devices to be equipped with like an age identification element, something like that, where if you're looking at adult websites, it's built into the phone. I guess right now it is up to whatever adult website or whatever to verify the age. And what lawmakers have proposed is if you go and buy said phone, I don't know how many 16-year-olds are buying a phone or whatever, but if you're not of age, then you can't access this content. So, and that sounds, I mean, you know, whatever you think of that, it does sound like maybe to some an intrusion on your liberties, but it's a weird hill to die on. Hey, we don't want restrictions on porn for children. And that's sort of what the tech companies, the Apples and Microsofts, the people who offer smartphones are fighting it. It becomes an added expense to them to equip their phones, to equip devices with this sort of thing. That looks like that's going to get some attention today in the House of Representatives. And the business community has the business community is fighting it. just not because they want children to see porn, or that they believe there's some kind of like libertarian philosophy for the owners of a smartphone, but instead it is about the bottom line, as most things are in Alabama. But that one looks like it's still got a head of steam, and it still may happen. By the way, the Mississippi legislature defeated the Alabama legislature last night, 16-11, if you care about that. It's funny to go to these things and the sponsors being like all of the big mules. It wasn't as much gambling this time. I believe just on Porch Creek sponsored a fireworks show afterwards. But it was for charity. And those of you that care about that, which I can't imagine it's too many of you, you heard it here, reporting to you live on FN Talk 106.5. I hear Senator Josh Carley from Enterprise may have broken his hip. There's always like a bad injury at these exhibition events, these sporting events put on by these political institutions. Somebody pulls a hamstring, twist an ankle or something like that. It was just a softball game. Also, you better watch this one close. Turmoil in Baldwin County with the school board. Tonight's a big a board meeting. And I really think this all kind of started with the penny or whatever it is, 40% of 1 cent. Sales tax is being levied on the beach communities. But not going to their schools. And then we know about Senator Elliott's bill, which is effectively dead. I don't see how it goes anywhere, even though it got out of committee. But the word on the street is we're going to see some potential personnel changes. There's a little bit of a fallout for the way it was handled and some other things going on in the school system. Watch that close. We could probably talk a little bit more about that tomorrow once we get some finality on that. National politics is the same. Obviously, Ukraine not probably going the way, not going in a good way for the Trump administration. I mean, either Trump is a stooge for Vladimir Putin or he isn't. But hitting Kiev and Trump making some comments yesterday, kind of taking some hits for that. And then finally, real quick, the Pete Hegseth stuff just won't go away. But I don't know how much longer, how much more oxygen that has. But you can just tell the guys, they want him out of the way and they're doing everything they can. And Trump has to stick with him. Mallory Pipey text line 251-343-0106. I'll read your text on the other side. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Flirting with the flight attendant.
Oh, mama, can this really be the end? To be stuck inside a movie with the Memphis Blues again.
Mona, welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us. On this Thursday morning, coming up in the next segment, our friend Joey Clark will be with us. We'll start here. Mommy issues. Just what Alabama deserves. Tommy Tuberculosis as its governor. That's hilarious. What's it to you, though? Would you rather have him as senator or governor there? mommy issues. A new texture. Good morning, Jeff. Trump can now move the Department of Agriculture to Kansas City. Wouldn't mind seeing that. More centrally located, right? Pat, port bills are a waste of money and time. The port sites have already shut down in the states that are doing this. You literally have to have a VPN to watch it in Alabama right now. Well, you say so. A named texter, the societal cost of port addiction is a greater evil than depriving men of the liberty to watch it. Alabama should be producing men who love God and lead from the front. We dare defend our rights. Ted, good morning, Jeff. Sorry you have allergies. Makes you sound a little bit like Alex Jones. Hope you get over them quickly. Yeah, this just isn't a radio voice, though. Like, and I talk a lot more than I ever have in my life. This, like, last 6 months, and it's kind of a product of my occupation, just putting out fires, being on the phone, trying to find out stuff, and then doing a three-hour radio show on top of that. It's like last night on my drive, coming home, and it wasn't, you know, from the ball game, which ended about 8 o'clock, and I rolled into Fairhope about 11. But for all the, except for about 15, 20 minutes, just returning phone calls or answering phone calls. Sly dog. Okay, Ukraine. Here's the peace deal. You get invaded by a stronger country, therefore you have to agree to let them keep all the land they took both now and what they took 10 years ago. Don't get any security agreements going forward. You really get nothing but agreement to stop the current invasion. No agreement. They won't invade you again. And it's your fault if you don't accept this agreement. Well, you're not wrong. Is it a doable endeavor? I mean, what's the ethical response? More just sort of bloodshed or ceding land? And I'm not making judgment here. But what remedy is there? The world's not going to create some kind of like military option here and drive out Russia. So I mean, it's a tough question. And just kind of looking at it, I really don't think what if some foreign power decided, hey, we're going to take Florida from you. This Crimea is a very important, strategically placed piece of land on the globe. And then if you want the killing to stop, you have to let us keep Florida. But I think it's a noble gesture to try to stop the war. What can you do to Russia? It's a hermit state. I mean, it's North Korea light. Hey, I was country. And then Paul writes, did you see Complete Unknown movie, Jeff? No, I did not. Mallory Piping text line 251-343-0106. Keep them coming, guys. We'll pick it up on the other side. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Where I wrecked my first car, I tore
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Mallory Piping text line 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me. Joining us now on the program, we usually hear from him on Wednesdays, but he's making time for us a day late, and we're very appreciative of his flexibility. Joey Clark. Joey, good morning. How are you?
Doing great this morning. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm out of that death trap known as the Alabama State House, so that's an improvement.
Yeah, that is a progress of a kind.
I tell you, you do this for a living, too. I can't shake this. I got this, like, a whole new radio voice for, like, this time of year. This is very Alex Jones-esque, as one of my listeners told me, but I think going to that building every week has something to do with it.
Oh, the mold in that building, like some of the rot in that building, I'm not talking about the people at the moment. It's very real. Like, you're right. There's that one day we were in the closet or something. There's something in that room.
Yeah. I mean, I suffered for like the entire last 2 hours of my program. And it's not so much the lawmakers. Like, I get it, man. Like, they don't need a big fancy, they're getting a big fancy building, but it's the people who work there. It's an occupational hazard.
Yeah.
And these guys, you hear these stories, these state troopers who provide security, and these, like, you know, the staffs and the LSA, like they're always having health problems. And some even like as bad as having had to have surgery. It's just that's not, you've got to have a legislative branch in your state government. And even if you think the lawmakers, they signed up for that, the people who worked there didn't, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, and this is why I haven't raised too much cane when it comes to them getting the new building. And, you know, a while back, I was half joking, of course, when I wrote about it, maybe it's the mold in the building that leads to such bad legislative outcomes. But when I started doing the research on the medical side, it clearly has effects on lungs and breathing quality. But there's a lot of early research into the effects on the neurology on your and on your psychological state. It can actually harm your brain. That's early research. But I wouldn't be surprised. If I had to be there every day, all day, there could clearly be effects.
Yeah, and it's people who work there year-round. The legislature's only there, you know, 3-4 months a year, and then maybe, you know, a couple of days a month throughout the rest of the year. But there's people that got to work there every day. I mean, there's a lot of businesses conducted, even when the legislature's not in session. So anyway, hey, Joey, is this something? I mean, I was going to text you about it, but I for whatever reason, decided to go after things kind of wrapped up, went to Prattville to eat lunch. I was coming back the old way and drove by the Montgomery Water Park. And I don't know how long the Montgomery, I know what, about a year and a half, 2 years, right? It's been open.
Right.
Nothing's changed. That neighborhood's still kind of sketch. Wasn't it supposed to like be this brand new awakening? And weren't we supposed to see like everything spruced up? And it just, it's the same kind of dilapidated rot you've seen there for decades.
Yeah, and it's it was obviously oversold. I think it starts with a daughter of one of the people that was on the economic development board on that board. They got that special economic zone to build it. She had a great visit to water park or whitewater raft. It's not like a fun water park, folks. It's like whitewater rafting is a better way to think of this. She had a great time in North Carolina. It's like, oh, we need this in Montgomery. They started pushing it. I believe that person I'm talking about, the mother, is now like the head of state economic development. So it's interesting how everybody's connected. And the way they sold it is, yeah, it will revitalize the area. It'll bring, you know, more money in. They did have Olympic trials there last year. I know some people use it, but last I saw the budget, somebody leaked it to me, a screenshot of it. They're in the red. And you would think, oh, you could make it up, you know, in high points and like everybody wants to go outside when it's summer. But I'm not seeing it. And they are now at the point of just wanting to ask more money of the county, of the city, of the state. That we need a zip line, sugar. We need all these other things. If we just keep building things, they will come. And I don't think it works.
No, it doesn't. And I, like I said, you know, it was way oversold to the reason I bring it up. I mean, it was oversold to the legislature, the state pumping money into it. And I think, you know, tell me this, Joey, about Montgomery. the problem, when I talked to Barfoot or Chambliss or any of those guys who are in y'all's delegation, it's sort of like this. They're like, well, you know, it's hard for us to get these kinds of projects funded because everybody thinks of Montgomery as just the capital city. Everybody thinks of those like four or five blocks with all the green rooftops and all the state government, and that's the money going into the Montgomery economy. But there's so much more to Montgomery, Alabama, and we don't really get a fair shot at these projects, and that's why that's why these Montgomery water parks sort of boondoggles become a thing, because, well, we get money to Birmingham, Huntsville, Mobile. Montgomery wants something besides just state government.
Yeah, and I mean, they thought it could lean into tourism and stuff. I mean, as much as I disagree fundamentally with, say, the EJI, the Equal Justice Initiative, and all the lynching memorial and stuff, not that I disagree with the history, I disagree with their current, how they use the history for their current political push and use it as a political cudgel. To their credit, that's brought in a boatload of money from tourism. So, I mean, that sort of stuff is working as they lean in on the civil rights history. I think I hate to sound like some lefty, but it almost comes across as like some gentrified, slippery lips of the bourgeoisie. It's like, oh, we had fun in North Carolina, we could do that here in Montgomery. And it, like, yeah, you can do it when you get special favors from the county, the city, the state. But this is unsustainable. A lot of people locally predicted this thing will not continue not to make money, even if it attracts a good crowd here or there. And eventually, Porch Creek Indians will come in and buy it up for pennies on the dollar.
And they'll make it work. It's funny, you know, like Birmingham tried in the early 2000s with like Vision Land, and that turned out to be a disaster. We had Gulf Quest out here that never, you know, a maritime museum. People didn't really want it, but they needed to spend it on something, I guess. But these like mandatory funds sort of projects that are backed by a bunch of government money, they never amount to anything. They turn out to be disasters.
And from the beginning of this, I said I wouldn't have voted for it if I was on the county commission. It looks like it's everybody's just getting their cut. For instance, they had to, by I guess state law, had to hire a minority contractor. The minority contractor they hired ended up suing them for racial discrimination, as they all had cost overruns. And it seemed like this is just a way for certain private interests to feed on the public trough. And because of the special designation as some economic development zone, there's no taxes paid, as you can invest all this money. It's a mess. I mean, and here's how much a mess it is. People are like, well, maybe we can attract a Buc-ee's to get the I-65 traffic and have a big old exit that leads to the White Water Park. And I'm like, Buc-ee's, just put something in Auburn. Like, and it's that sort of ridiculous, like, well, maybe if we add this, it'll work. I think Montgomery should double down on the manufacturing sector as the port down in Mobile expands. We're going to have a big receiving center right here on the river. There's going to be a lot of development around the city limits that's primed Montgomery, I think, for a lot of economic growth, including, I think, that huge Meta data center. But if Montgomery doesn't get crime under control, even the perception of crime or education, despite having some pretty good magnet schools and private schools, I don't think it's going to hum as well as it should and could.
I tell you what, Joey, I get into, I've been staying in Hope Hall lately at that Hampton Inn, just because it's like right there on Tuesday nights where I go do my show Wednesdays at the State House. About 1:30, gunshots. Woken up with gunshots. I don't know what I was getting shot at. I didn't really care, but you could hear them off in the distance. And that's my perception of Montgomery.
Yeah, no, and as I've grown up here and lived here, places I would go without thinking a second, say like Eastdale Mall on the Atlanta Highway, you know, waste a few hours on a Saturday walking around the mall, and I don't do that anymore. And it's not like, oh, there's a bit high chance, but if it's even 0.5% of a chance something could go down there, I don't want to be in the area if somebody starts shooting. Like, I don't walk around my day feeling unsafe in Montgomery like somebody's going to target me. It's just you're playing the odds of maybe you might get robbed, but most of the violence is people who know each other. domestic disputes and then battles on the streets, usually young men, young black men.
Yeah, and I like I said, you could just watch it kind of deteriorate over the years, you know. You're right, because, like, not even like 5 years ago, late at night, you could walk from your hotel to the places kind of downtown there, Commerce Street or whatever. Now it's like kind of ill-advised. Maybe you should take an Uber, you know. I hate that. You know, I thought they had done a pretty good job with downtown Montgomery, but you just hear about carjackings and muggings and stuff like that, and you got to be careful.
Yeah, and to the mayor and the police department's credit, homicides are down. They're still too high, but they're down from the peak after COVID. The property crimes are still up. And, I mean, some of this is also very much to the credit of Aaliyah, Hal Taylor, and the sheriff, Sheriff Cunningham, up here, where they did that Montgomery Area Crime Suppression Unit that did crack down on a lot, confiscated a lot of weapons. But the kind of underlying, why do especially young kids choose that lifestyle? Why do they get into, even if they're not killing anybody, breaking into people's homes, breaking into people's cars, as long as you have crap education. And at the end of the day, I hate how everybody's like, oh, my son or daughter would never do anything wrong. It's like, I think it's certain parents who, that's children having children is the nicest way I can put it.
Yeah, well, it's culture. And this is like the problem. In the state, as we sit here and talk, and there's probably people, well, why doesn't the government do something about it? And I just don't think there's a, I don't think there's a government solution to cultural problems necessarily. There's some things they can do, maybe on the margins, but as a whole, they're not able. It's not something the government can fix with a magic wand.
Well, and I'm at peace that Montgomery is now a Democratic majority city, a black majority city that's, even if they might be a little disappointed in Mayor Reed, are going to defend him being the first black mayor. There's a symbolic significance there to a lot of people. And they've done some good things on the margins, like they've upped police pay. They've created some housing program where if you're going to work as an officer in the city, will almost completely help you finance that house, no down payment. It's a nice deal. But if, you know, building up community centers, all these things on the margins are fine. But I think it's more a cultural problem, shifting the cultural conversation to a question of leadership. Love him or hate him, Mayor Reed has an issue with the police culture around here. Say if the young person's like, hey, I might take a policing job in Montgomery, Alabama. They're like, well, look at the benefits. Look at the pay. It's pretty. Look at the low cost of living. All this is pretty great. So you call up the local fraternal order of police and you call up the other surrounding law enforcement entities. And the word is, well, if you just happen to screw up or even are perceived to screw up, the mayor does not have your back. And that's been the pattern. So he's got to fix that. And I think it's a crucial thing going forward.
Yeah, you know, Stephen Reed's kind of been, I think, just a bad mayor, but he seems to be very popular politically, and I don't know. I still haven't figured that out. He's got his detractors even in the, you know, the African-American community, but no one can lay a glove on him. It's just the Joe Reed machine is still alive and well.
Yes, it is, and, you know, I've gotten to know the mayor's brother, Joe M. Reed, the older son, had him on the show several times, and I mean, I think they're just hooked into the national Democratic, say, network. This is why you saw, I guess, Craig Munger wrote up at 1819 News. You saw him on Al Sharpton's show the other day. So he's very connected in that sort of corporate media, the usual venues that the Democrats hold, and including the fundraising circuit and yada, yada, yada. So I think that's partly where a lot of his power comes from. And partly, I'll just be blunt, there are a lot of black folks in the city of Montgomery. We've never had a black mayor, never thought they've gotten their voice and their point of view heard. And now that the majority, they're going to do their thing. And how dare you criticize our guy, even if he ain't perfect. And that's not the craziest thing in the world.
Well, you know, all these cities in Alabama got their problems. We got our share of them here in Mobile. But it was just like an observation. Like, I had not driven that way in a long time. And I came back that way and I was heading to the ball game. As the Maxwell Air Force Base, and there's a water park, and hey, it really hasn't done what they said it was going to do. This is still very blighted, kind of claptrap existence, and maybe it's still to come, but the big Maxwell Gateway, as they call it, just not really taken off as advertised.
And honestly, rather than just letting these sort of projects fail, and it sounds like there's more than just the Whitewater Park in Montgomery, when they look like they're just set up to fail, I think the state should be much quicker to have a forensic audit of these things and see actually where money's going. Because if it's not working, yet it's spending all this money, I just all of a sudden start smelling kickbacks. So you need an audit to prove it.
Yeah, I just think these government projects are bad news. Joined by Joey Clark here on the program. Well, Joey, actually, we have killed an entire segment. I just looked up at the clock. Thanks for hopping on this morning and making time for us.
Of course. Appreciate it, Jeff.
All right, Joey Clark there from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery News and Views. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And they still aren't seen.
I gave you my heart and I tried to make you happy. And you gave me nothing.
To the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Thursday morning to you. Coming up in the next hour, April Marie Fogle from 1819 News and Greg Davis from Al Cap and Priority Talk Radio in Birmingham. We'll talk to, it's just like I said, there's a couple of gambling bills that have been passed by the Senate. And you're like, wow, how did that happen? Well, they're local bills. And there's a tradition here with local bills that members walk away, they abstain from voting. So you're still able to get a quorum, but they won't vote yes or no on a particular local bill or a local piece of legislation. And Bobby Singleton, well, there's two. There's Lowndes County and there's Greene County, which do have gambling facilities. Or gaming or whatever you want to call it, just to keep them open. They do this all the time. But the fear here is that this might be used as a vehicle for something statewide. And just want to, I think it's highly unlikely, but it is something to be aware of. Sly Dog and Trump put his weight behind it. He can make a difference in making Russia agree to a tougher agreement. We can stop the black market flow of oil all over the world. We can put 145% tariff on everything they ship. He does it to our friends. Why not do it to an enemy like Russia? We don't import from Russia. That's what my understanding. There's not a lot of things that are imported from Russia. Jerry, oversold to the legislature. The sorry clowns just do what they are told. They do. Some of them. I mean, Jerry, if you think about it like this, though, somebody has to be telling them what to do. And it's not the governor. Kay Ivey's MIA. Kay Ivey is a lame duck governor. She's just a placeholder at this point. She does the ribbon cuttings. She'll show up at a lunch counter somewhere to get her picture made. She's not someone who really speaks out. And so what it is, it's the leadership, but their buttons are being pushed by the special interest class. Those are the people who run the state. And it feels like to me, maybe I'm totally wrong here, but something's going to break at some point. And I think, and I don't know if it's going to be Tommy Tuberville or what, but there's sort of a populist revolt that's kind of overdue. at least make it harder to get, like, so-called opportunity districts for big business. My name takes, well, I'll get to this in the next segment. Y'all need to stay tuned. Mallory Pipe, text line 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Why can't you see what you do?
Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for listening on this Thursday morning. Everybody except for you, Joel. Text line, Mallory Pipey, text line 251-343-0106. If you'd like to be in touch with the program, make sure you utilize the text line. April Marie Fogle in about a half hour, about an hour and a half. Greg Davis from ALCAP. So stay tuned for that. One text I said get to right after the break. Jeff, there's numerous things that the governments can do to reduce crime, starting with keeping criminals incarcerated. Most crimes are committed by repeat offenders, so try to keep the guns out of criminals' hands. Let's keep the criminals out of the hands off of the guns. I mean, that's a fair assessment. The problem in Alabama is prison overcrowding. Your real violent offenders go to prison. They don't just go to jail. They go to prison. And we got two super prisons on the way. Two mega prisons, I guess, is the. You got a little noise in my ear there. The mega prisons on the way, Elmore County and Escambia County. And once they are completed, and we're years away from that, they're going to be overcrowded again. You kind of wonder why this is being handled this way. I don't think it's, you know, I get these, I get texts like yours all the time. Like, who in this state that's in, like, on team conservative, team Republican, is against new prisons? Now, what's wrong with the prisons we got, you may ask? And they're a violation of the Eighth Amendment. They're very medieval. There's a whole, like, story to be told here. In the late 70s, Alabama had a similar problem with its prison situation. The federal government said, your prisons aren't up to a standard of the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. The federal courts did. Now, at the time, you had George Wallace, who like was kind of a guy who would stand up to the federal judges, stand up to the federal courts. But, of course, he always lost. But it's sort of the same problem with, like, a Roy Moore. They made themselves martyrs, and they became more and more popular. But, you know, in our system, the federal government is supreme on this. The Eighth Amendment is a federal issue about cruel and unusual punishment, and the federal courts had deemed our prisons to be cruel and unusual punishment. So Wallace had to build new prisons. What did Wallace do? George Wallace turned it into a jobs program. He looked around the state where the places where there was high unemployment. And that's where he put prisons. Bullock County, that's Union Springs. Barber County, that's where he's from, Clayton, Eufaula. There's a bunch of prisons out there. Escambia County, Monroe County, prisons. And rather than building like one big, big prison or two or three big, big prisons, you built a bunch of smaller prisons and spread them around the state. It made it a jobs program. Well, the problem with that was it became expensive. Yeah, it's a jobs program, but you'd have to have a doctor at every facility. You'd have to have a, I don't know, some kind of like remedial education and all of these different things in the prison system to lower recidivism. So when the incarcerated do get out, they have something to go to so they don't commit crime again. They're trying to reform these individuals. Well, the problem became this. They just couldn't staff them. That's where we are now. 40 years later, they can't staff all these prisons that Wallace built. And crime, as the population's grown in Alabama, you have more criminals. So you have a place to put them. So for years, going back to probably even Riley, but certainly Bentley, and now Kay Ivey, they tried to solve this problem, but they've gone about it in such a weird way. Finally, the legislature, under threat of a federal court order, under threat of a federal lawsuit, a federal takeover, finally moved on allocating some money for prisons. And they're building it, but it's just, as anything government does, it's fraught with problems. It's fraught with cronyism. They had to know what they were doing when they lowballed these estimates under a system, a construction management system. So you're not getting these prisons online. And they're going to be overcrowded by the time they open. You need a third prison. But there's just not money for it. And it's not something you necessarily run on. But like my opinion on this is, when has a legislator typically really done what they've ran on? I mean, they do some to some degree. They also do a lot of things they didn't run on, like gas tax increases and things like that. But this is a complaint, and I think this is where you got to, if you're really concerned about crime, the state's got to build more prisons. Now, you have a very vocal minority of just left-wingers, bleeding hearts. You don't believe that anybody ought to be ever incarcerated. That we have an unfair system. It's just nonsense. And they make it out to be like, well, there's like a prison industrial complex here. Somebody's making money off of being tough on crime, quote unquote, so we can incarcerate more people and contractors can get richer building prisons. It's just nonsense. That's such a convoluted theory. But I'm going to tell you, on a texture, I really believe this antiquated way of thinking that you as a conservative talk radio listener concerned about crime that you don't want the state spending money on prisons or whatever. But I think a real serious, and maybe it's going to be Tommy Tuberville, and I don't know that he's ever even thought about the situation. If you ask him how he saw the prison problem, he'd probably say build more. These things are very expensive. $100 million. Pat, start putting the dirt bags in the dirt, and we wouldn't have that problem. Well, you don't really mean that. You want the death penalty to be used, but you don't want an all-powerful government. Aggressively pursuing the death penalty at every opportunity. You want the death penalty to be the means of last resort. Now, sometimes the last resort is the necessary option. I get it. But if you just start, like, really being kind of trigger happy on the death penalty, I mean, that's when the social contract starts to fall apart. If y'all look throughout human history, Derek, either castrate them or educate them, one or the other. That's just, I think, another one of these Eighth Amendment violations, Derek. I mean, you guys, you constitutional conservatives out there, you believe the Bill of Rights, it's fundamental to the American Republic. You can't violate the Eighth Amendment. It's a non-starter. And look, the Eighth Amendment, the interpretation of it, it's not up to you and I, Derek. It's up to the courts. That's why. So I don't think castration is going to be an option. Unless you are the convicted of something really heinous sexually. They do chemical castration when they want to. But I don't think that's a viable solution. Leo, I still don't see the problem with the tent city prisons. They were good enough for us in Afghanistan. Different climate, Leo. We have tornadoes. It would be a real security problem. In Afghanistan, it's what, deserts? And they did some of this in Arizona. But I don't think the tent jails or the tent prisons is a viable option either. We just got to get serious. If you want to be serious about crime, we need truth in sentencing. You have these judges who kind of overstepped their boundaries. And there's just a few of them in this state. You also have like a Department of Corrections that oversteps its boundaries, and they're just looking for ways to release people because they want to keep that overcrowding situation under control. Well, the way to fix overcrowding is to build more capacity, I believe. Derek, even if I gave you dull scissors, you're not going to do that. You want to go try to castrate a convicted felon with a pair of dull scissors? It's probably not going to end well for you. Dan, if we need prisons, we need prisons. It's the deals and methods, these new ones, came about that irritate many folks. I think that's absolutely spot on. So when they decided to build this Elmore County prison, what they did, they wanted to go, now years earlier, Kay Ivey, she's like just the worst optics in the world. She has bad PR people sometimes. The stack of papers up to like, seemed like the ceiling. Signing a lease deal that fell apart. They wanted to use the same plans for the new prison, and it just didn't work exactly like they had hoped. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hellraisers. People get out of our way wherever we go.
Come into your life like I do every night from the heart of your radio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheap songs. There's open everybody out in radio land. Find the love just as true as mine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up in about 5 minutes or so, April Marie Fogle will be with us from 1819 News. Farm prisons, you don't work, you don't eat. Well, it's like if they have some kind of weather act of God or something, then you, it still falls under that Eighth Amendment. Guys, like, all these things y'all want to do, listen, we're not some like, we're not Ecuador or even El Salvador or whatever. I mean, you know, you're granted certain rights even if you're incarcerated. They put that in the Eighth Amendment in the Bill of Rights. You could disagree with it, but all these solutions are not going to be workable. Mike, going back to the projects, instead of the Section 8 housing spread throughout our cities, we'll at least put the majority of criminals back in a singular location. I don't know you could do much. I mean, obviously there's monitoring and there's, you know, certain criminals can't be within certain areas. And how workable that is. Firedog, Singapore uses a death penalty for just about everything. The crime there is next to nothing. Punishment works. Look at illegals with two felonies that kill two kids out after 3 years. Sorry, but three strikes and you're out should be the death penalty. And no, you don't get 40 years of appeals. Recidivism rate is 95%. You're not going to reform these guys. Well, you got to change the Constitution then. You don't want to live in Singapore, Fire Dog. You don't want to live in fear of your government. That's the whole point of the whole American experiment. We're not Singapore. We don't need to be Singapore. Singapore doesn't work. There's a reason, like, we're the most prosperous nation on earth. We think it's not perfect. But a Singapore system would not work in America. Trace, they don't need more prisons. They just need to start executing people for lesser crimes, and then maybe they'll think twice about doing the crime. What's happened? There used to be kind of a system in place. And I'm going to say this, it was a good system necessarily. But over time, you got a lot of left-wing nonprofits. You got the ACLUs and the Southern Poverty Law Center, Alabama Appleseed, whatever you want to call them. What they have done is make it a lot harder to have that kind of system in place. Not an execution system, but a tough on crime system. You just can't lock people up like you used to. Before, you didn't have resources at the ready funding these liberal causes, but now you do. And the problem now is, Trace, the solution has to withstand legal challenges. Like, whatever solution the state of Alabama puts forth to solve crime, I believe you can overcome the political challenges. Right now, there's a perception that we live in a police state in the inner city. And when Stephen Reed, Randall Woodfin, or whoever, Barbara Drummond, I suppose, when they run for mayor, they run on ending the so-called police state. Another good example, Rudy Giuliani and Michael Bloomberg, the way they ran New York City. Bill de Blasio comes in, And he undoes a lot of those policies. Now, fast forward. This mayor now, Adams, trying to reinstate some of that. But the people that are governed under those cities voted that kind of tough old crime system out. Mallory Pappy, text line 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Text line 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me and we'll proceed accordingly. Joining us now on the line, she's our Thursday regular. April Marie Fogle is with us, 1819 News. April Marie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well this week. Very rainy week.
Yeah, it is. Well, sort of. Not as much down here as it is was up there, up that way when I was there. So last night, it sounds like Tommy Tuberville, he was in Alabama yesterday, did an event with Katie Britt and Cash Patel. But I guess they had other obligations, but he kind of hung around in that area. And it sounds like telling people he's going to run for governor. It's over, right? Tommy Tuberville is going to be the next governor of Alabama.
I would put money on it if I were the betting kind. I really think that he still has to lay out, and a lot of the people who are skeptical of this run are like, well, what will he do? Well, I think he's smart enough to lay out a plan, but I think if he lays out a coherent, bold strategy for Alabama – that people want it. We're tired of having this very moderate messages coming out of Montgomery, whether it be from the legislature or the governor's office. We want a Trump DeSantis style person in there.
I agree with that, but I would say this. I think after 10 years of Kay Ivey and she picks and chooses things she really wants and she gets them, but there's just like no action there. And the state's got problems. Her solutions are always sort of the big government variety or whatever you want to call them. But it's been a very underwhelming run. And I think people, I mean, maybe it started out a little better. It's lost a lot of steam. She's lost a lot of steam. And after like 10 years of that, people want something different. And we do this in politics all the time. The reaction sometimes at the ballot box is a bit of an overreaction. I don't know that Tommy Tuberville is going to be an overreaction, but kind of on paper, that's what it looks like.
What I am interested to see is if this displaces people in the Montgomery establishment machine. I mean, keep in mind, Trump in his first administration versus Trump in his second administration, that first administration still had a lot of deep state, a lot of establishment Republicans, and its second is bolder, more conservative. I'm hoping that a Tuberville administration comes in and cleans house of not just staff, what you think of as a governor's staff, but what we think of for these agency heads. Imagine an Al Dot without a John Cooper. Imagine we had agencies who were as bold as some of the agency leads in the Trump administration. That's what I want to see. And I've lived in Alabama now going on a little over 12 years, and I haven't seen that kind of vision for the state. And I hope and expect it from a Tuberville administration, whereas I necessarily wouldn't from somebody else here in Alabama.
It's funny you say that. Like yesterday, after my show wraps up, I kind of hang out in the hallways of the State House. And there's a joint transportation committee hearing, which was set up when they raised the gas tax. It was supposed to be sort of an oversight committee. Here comes John Cooper, just kind of hobbling down the hallway, guided by, Tony Harris as his right hand man. It's very emblematic of the Ivy administration. And I'm sitting there, like a lawmaker would come up and say hello or whatever. He's talking to some lobbyist, presumably a road builder or two, and they're talking about like this great the progress they're making on the West Alabama corridor. But you listen to that, and I think it's like that kind of stuff. Just people are kind of, well, we've done that for too long. It's time to be a little more aggressive.
Yeah, I think that everybody in their current positions, and you mentioned, used it to describe the Ivy earlier, it's underwhelming, right? It is what we have seen. It's status quo. You know what to expect, especially after the gas tax. There was a few minutes there where it was like, who's getting strong-armed here? But I really believe that we need a fresh vision in each of these cabinet positions who people are going to get excited to see in the hall because they're going to feel like their ideas are going to be listened to.
Right. Or just the public, like more responsive to the public would be nice. It's almost as if we're at this place, and I don't know how much Tuberville is going to respond to people in Alabama, but you watch it and you think, well, this governor could care less what the court of public opinion says. And she showed that during COVID. And the problem is now, look, she wins her elections. And I don't know if it's necessarily a mandate or what do you want to call it. I mean, she wins overwhelmingly. There's no other takeaway. But it's just like the system has its person and the system's kind of, it's almost as if it's running on like autopilot.
No, that's exactly how the voters have been voting for this safe vote. The vote they know, when it comes to Ivy, she, by not getting herself involved in scandal, she has survived. And I've said it before, but I don't think breathing and scandal free should be where the bar is for our gubernatorial holder, for the gubernatorial office. And so I think that this election, and, I hope it's a competitive, spirited primary. I think that would be fun. Maybe not as competitive and spirited as, say, the current lieutenant governor's race seems to be shaking out to be, but I would like a competitive and spirited, this is how conservative I'm going to be and what an administration would be, because I think that would be a wake-up call to voters of how bad things have been for 10 years.
But you're not going to get that. We're going to coordinate Tommy Tuberville. No one's going to be able to run against him. He's going to get the Trump endorsement. So the hope is he runs.
Ainsworth in Senate?
He doesn't want it, or he says he does it. Maybe he could be convinced to do it. I think Ainsworth would be a great senator. And then the other name, obviously, Steve Marshall, I think is a good option too. But for governor, there's not going to be like this debate about ideas or anything. It's essentially, I believe, and I know I'm speaking for the voters here, but I feel like I got a pretty good grasp. Do what you did in the Senate as governor will be all right.
Yeah, I think where you end up with some pushback is, and by the way, I have never been swayed by the carpetbagger message. Never in my life have I seen someone say this person is a carpetbagger. They lived a couple of years at the beach or they don't own a house in the district or any of that and have that stick. The question is there an appetite out there to at least hit him on that in the beginning of the campaign? We've seen some of it already. And I think that gets him to push some of his ideas. And hopefully, again, he does have a plan and ideas that go beyond just popularity contest.
Yeah, and it remains to be seen what that will be. Right now, if you started asking him about some of these, like, issues that overwhelm the state, and maybe it's this April Marie, the issues that we talk about to chattering class, we swear up and down, they're the most important things. They're the priority, but that they're not. We get caught in the bubble sometimes. I mean, I certainly am guilty of that. But I don't know. You know, the sort of the hot burning topics of state politics right now, the narrative's kind of put in place, and then we debate accordingly about whatever we think of a lot of these issues. Maybe it's like Tommy Tuberville who used to come in and say, no, y'all need to be focused on this. Y'all need to be focused on that, whatever it may be. But as of right now, the one thing that has me concerned with Coach is does he really have a grasp of, like, the issues that are confronting the state of Alabama right now?
Well, and you look at him from going from a football coach to being the U.S. Senate. Did he have – he onboarded really quickly there and did really well and ended up making, clearly, a name for himself, both back with his constituents in the national media and becoming a favorite of Trump. I think that shows an ability to catch on quick and to hit the ground running. And so he has that going for him. He's shown he's done it once. I'm not terribly worried about that. I think he could have been more status quo in D.C., played it safer, and he didn't. And that's all he has to say is, look, you know, I may not know, you know, I may not know everything I need to know about the, you know, decades-old fights with the Birmingham Waterworks or which members of the legislature have their pet projects or whatever the thing is. But he is going to know enough from his Senate days to be able to say, okay, this is how I'm going to figure it out. And this is who I can trust to help me with that.
Well, that's another good question. Like, who's in the Tommy Tuberville cabinet? And is it the usual suspects? Now, let's kind of look at the evolution of Tommy Tuberville. He starts running in 2019, but just kind of being in this world, talk radio, people are very skeptical of Tommy Tuberville. You know, he had to prove himself. Now, after a while, he became the most popular Republican, by far more popular than Bradley Byrne or, Jeff Sessions, who was the most popular Republican in the history of the state, I believe, up until Tommy Tuberville. And obviously the Trump situation didn't help anything, but he really is, like, ingratiated himself. And I think he's dining off of this, the abortion holds on the flag officer promotions and not buckling right away to Mitch McConnell, not buckling to Lindsey Graham, not giving in to the status quo. That's been his kind of calling card from that point forward, and that's why he really picked up steam as the front runner, I think, in a hypothetical gubernatorial discussion.
Yeah, I think all of those things are great points. This is who he has set himself up to be, as someone who won't be bullied by the establishment or the media. And we don't really have that in Alabama right now at a state level. We've got a couple of lawmakers who will talk on the record. You've got a couple of them on your show regularly, right? Like, you know who the reliable conservative voices are in the state talking about what the state legislature should be doing or what the governor's office should be doing. But we don't have anyone who has that, like, oomph. Steve Marshall has evolved into someone, I think, who has done a better job of articulating what we should be prioritizing as a state. But I think Tuberville brings a lot to the table, and I am all about it.
Joined by April Murray Fogle, 1819 News, here on the program. Well, we just got a few minutes here, but we got to talk about Samford University. Now, it's not really necessarily a Mobile story, but I think it's important that we got to have, like, sacred institutions, and sacred institutions are your longtime sort of Baptist, and I guess they don't really consider themselves Baptist anymore, but that's supposed to be the Baptist college in this state. You don't have this problem at University of Mobile, the other Baptist college, at all compared to Samford. But, like, what we found, or what you found, I guess, is it's not as advertised. People are sending their kids to Samford. These alums are sending contributions to Samford, and they're dining off of this perception that isn't reality.
Yeah. So here's the thing about Sanford is, you're right. Institutionally, its reputation is that this is a conservative college school. And you look at their marketing materials, you look at the pictures, you look at the everything, and it says one thing. But underneath, there has been a pervasive creep of things like woke ideology, whether it be the DEI stuff. They've got gender ideology nonsense creeping in. And one of the things that you'll hear a lot of Sanford supporters say is they have beat back some of the LGBTQ creep, but it still managed to make its way in. I think that, to me, the school needs to put as much effort getting rid of the nonsensical liberal woke stuff that it's there, that it spent putting it in. And by the way, they spent a lot of time getting it into the curriculum, getting it into the university.
Yeah, and it's just it's just your typical, like, it's turned into like your sort of a typical Northeastern liberal arts left-wing playground, faculty lounge sort of place. And that's fine. They can do whatever they want to do, but I think it's in the public interest to point out that it's not that. That it's defying some of these long-held traditions. It's doing things that aren't of that brand, and people need to be aware of that, and maybe that needs to be kind of on the table when you talk about where you're going to send your children to college or where you are sending, you know, charitable contributions.
Well, and here's the thing is, if Stanford University wants to say, they have changed, obviously, from their Baptist affiliation to just being Christian with a Baptist history. But if they want to make the creep to say we are a Baptist institution that is also, you know, implementing these other ideas, then say it. Say it and stick by it. But what I don't like, what I particularly don't like, is the evasiveness of, we're going to make some people happy by implementing all of this stuff in an institution, making it a part of our institution, and then we're going to run and hide when a spotlight is shining on that. I think no entity should be that is trusted, whether it be a school or, you know, a trusted brand or business, they should be immune to someone looking and saying, are you doing what you promised to do, especially when it comes to our education system?
April Marie, we're out of time, but folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
Find my writing at 1819 News and find me on X at April Marie, APRYLMARIE.
April Marie, thanks for making time for us this morning.
Great to talk to you.
All right, we got to get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is FN Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jump Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Mallory Pipey, text line 251-343-0106. Hit us up there. A bunch of texts to get to. We get one out of the way here before we go to the top of the hour. Unnamed texter, people should choose not to live in the same place that allows Section 8. Besides the crime, how is that even fair for someone to get the same housing as someone who is paying for it? Well, it's like all these government solutions, and like you got to understand, it's better than a homeless problem. Now, Section 8, I believe, does what anything when the government, whenever the government gets involved in the marketplace, It does what it causes, like an unnecessary inflation. So if you have Section 8 housing, but there's a demand for housing, then the prices of houses are going to go up. So, I mean, in some ways, Section 8, I guess, deflates the cost of rent or whatever by what it does to the neighborhood. But on the other hand, it interferes with the supplies. The value of the housing is not what the market value is. But as like I said, the institutional left will tell you, would you rather have these people out on the streets?
Promise me, son, not
or would you rather have government subsidized housing?
Walk away from trouble if you can.
Mallory Pipey text line 251-343-0106. We got a ton of texts to get to. We'll get to those on the other side. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
To understand, son, you don't have to fight to be. Man, there's someone for everyone.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. Mallory Pipey, text line 251-343-0106. Hit me up on that text line, and we will get into it right now. Still to come on the program, we'll talk to Greg Davis from ALCAP. He'll be with us, so make sure you stay tuned for that. We're going to go through these texts real quick. Fire dog, you punish the behavior you don't want. If you are going to punish people, you deal with the crime. That's a really dumbass idea. Well, it's just you've got to be within the law. Primarily, you've got to be within the U.S. Constitution. All of you constitutional conservatives out there, yeah, you like the Second Amendment, you like the First. We got the Eighth Amendment, too. I'm telling you, that is the impediment to a lot of what these sort of ideas you have about heightened death penalty and castration or whatever, tent cities. As long as you have liberal federal judges, as long as you have Myron Thompsons and guys like that, this is the system we have agreed to live under. Named Texter. Are you identifying as a liberal defense lawyer now, Jeff? I'm telling you the reality on the ground. I know what wins and what doesn't win in court. There's a legal precedent there. It's fun to talk about it on the radio, isn't it? It's fun to talk about it on the text line. But that doesn't really get to the problem. We can talk about these hypothetical solutions everybody has. But they're just not viable. I don't know what you want me to tell you. It's the world we live in. You don't have to like the world we live in. But there's just certain realities that we have to deal with. There's guardrails in place. There are things done to limit government. And that includes things to limit government when it comes to the incarcerated. I'm not some bleeding heart, but I'm just telling you how it is. The liberal defense lawyers, although I believe they're on the wrong side of some bad causes, they they're going to win. And your solution's not going to be a solution. It's going to get struck down by the courts. I think the solution is you can incarcerate people. You just need a place to put them and let the system try to take care of it. I don't think you need to go out with a firing squad or start castrating or whatever. C.B. Carl. Fardog is correct. When I was there, they had a sign over the base gate that said multiple languages, drop your drugs or drop dead. Also, it was the cleanest place I'd ever seen. It was a fine of about $300 for dropping a cigarette butt. Well, y'all want to go live in Singapore? Go live in Singapore. Well, we have a Bill of Rights in this country. You're not going to give somebody the death penalty or caning for littering. It's not a hard concept. Just try to be rooted in reality. It's the world we live in. You don't have to be of the world, but you got to be in the world. Unnamed texter, how about predicting good time on learning how to read or predicating good time on learning how to read? I think they do some of that. I mean, like, if you get educated, there are opportunities to have your sentence reduced. What has happened, unfortunately, unnamed texter, is that system's been abused and they had to, like, really, really police it a lot better where people were getting released for all these things for good time, but they weren't really putting into good, quote unquote, good time. And they were just checking boxes just to get people moved through the system to get them out of the jailhouse and into the world where they're not a burden on the taxpayer. Mike, I'm sure crime is up in the city of Mobile from 3 decades ago, but the perception is way worse now. It's because there's a crime in areas that didn't used to have it before Section 8 housing being spread throughout West Mobile. Instead of them all being in a few individual locations that people would instinctively be able to avoid, now the average non-criminal can't avoid it because they're in pockets everywhere. I mean, I agree. But policymakers have all these, like, goody-two-shoe academics think if you spread the Section 8 housing around and disperse it, then there's sort of a, I don't know if it's peer pressure or whatever, sort of the environment that they're in. It's a silly notion that if you take poverty and you put poverty in a more of an upscale place, that poverty ends. But that's what they're doing. Unnamed texture, I totally agree government gets involved. Prices go up. Give money to families who do not need the money for private schools. Private school prices go up. We got to stop spending money on pointless handouts like school choice. I don't think it's pointless. People want school choice. They should have school choice. But let me explain to you school choice a little bit. And I absolutely agree with you on the private school aspect. When the government gets involved, it's just like Obamacare. The cost of services goes up. Now, you can say that healthcare is a right. It's not. But for whatever reason, and I'm not necessarily against it, we decided a long time ago that society would have some minimal degree of public education. You would have the right to education, or at least the opportunity. And this is the Jeff Poor, and I've said it till I'm blue in the face. It's going to make some people mad. It's going to make the people without children mad, but whatever. I you know where I am. We decided a long time ago we'd have a public education system in Alabama. We decided we'd have it in this country. and we delegate that role to the states. So every child born in this country is entitled, and they can make out of it whatever they want, but they're entitled to some public education. It's just, that is the basic ground rules. To have a functioning society, you've got to have an educated public who can read, who can write, who can add, that can subtract, that can to perform in a basic, minimal function. So we have public education in America. Even if you don't have children, you have to pay into that public education system because it makes a society, it makes the world that you live in function, okay? That is the ground rules. I didn't make that rule up. You didn't make it up, but that is the ground rules. Every child born in this country, and even some that aren't even children of parents who are supposed to be here, are entitled to education. It's not going away. It's here. It's going to stay. So you have to operate on that assumption. If you as a parent, if you as a guardian, if you as some kind of benefactor, take that burden away from the government, and you homeschool, or you send your child to private school, and you're taking that burden away from us, the taxpayers, I think you're entitled to something. I don't know what it should be, but you're entitled to something. Tax credit, whatever it may be. You are no longer taking this child and putting him in a public school system that's very expensive per pupil. You're taking that upon yourself, and you're putting your kid in a private school. You're homeschooling your child, whatever it is you're doing, and that child's getting the same education everyone else is, but you're doing it in a way that is not a burden on the taxpayer. You ought to get something in return for that. It's not a difficult concept. And please do not tell me, well, I chose not to have children, so I should get something back too. That's not how it works. Everybody has to pay into it. But if you take in a child that's coming to this world in the United States of America, and you choose not to send that child to the public school, you send them to a private school, you ought to get something back in return. You shouldn't have to pay double. You shouldn't have to pay for your public school burden and pay for private school. John, conservatism is not important. I want the governor who will accomplish and get things. If a liberal can get it done, we need him or her. I want a governor that will change the fact that Alabama is for years behind everyone else. And don't tell me that's just media hype. We can see it. It's undeniable. It is media hype. The metrics they put in place to judge Alabama are rooted in these liberal assumptions. But some of that's cultural. It's not what the government's doing. So what I would say about this, though, John, I totally disagree with you about getting things done. You don't want a very proactive liberal government in place installing a bunch of liberal policies. It does matter if it's liberal or conservative. That does matter. Glenn, I don't know how much traveling you do. You probably live in the same vacation box like everyone else around here. Disney, 38, and Gatlinburg. You're totally wrong. Try spreading your wings and do some traveling. America's filthy and riddled with violent crime. Go to Switzerland. No, I don't have to go to Switzerland. I don't have to go anywhere. I'm not going to be one of these guys that needs to go see Switzerland to know how the world should operate. But I don't go to Gatlinburg 38 or Disney. Well, I haven't been to Disney in probably 10 years. It doesn't matter. The Switzerland discussion is off the table because we don't have that kind of system in America. We have a constitution and it has protections in place. So you can talk about Switzerland. You can talk about the virtues of Singapore. Those are not workable models for the United States of America. Why is it so hard? A new texter. Hey, brother. This is Billy D. Yeah, you know, Napoleon kind of started all that stuff. He saw the need in educating the masses in case he needed them to go to war. I don't think that's the motivation here. Some of it is indoctrination and social engineering into the public school system. But in theory, the public schools were created so you just didn't have an uneducated, destitute class that can be productive in society. It's as simple as that. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Fits my life, oh so right. My Dixieland life.
More, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off.
Welcome back to the Jeff
Moore
Show.
But do it all.
Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. A little breaking news here. Not a major, major story, but our Erica Thomas at 1819 News is reporting John Gray, a political consultant we know pretty well, has been around Mobile for a long, long time, has resigned a position with the Baldwin County public school system. He can be a controversial figure at times. I guess he was serving in a PR role for the school board. I'm sure some of you would take issue with me categorizing that. But as such as it is, he has officially resigned his position. So there you have it. Those of you who are engaged in the Baldwin County school saga. I'm going to get through these texts real quick before we get to our next guest. Sorry, Jeff, but sending your kid to a private school does not negate you of your public obligation. That's just how it works. But you're fulfilling your public obligation by sending your child to a private school. So your public obligation is being fulfilled, Leo, is what the point. I think you're entitled to something because your public obligation is, hey, you have to educate all these children. Well, you're taking, and I don't know how much the monetary value you would assign to it which should be, but you're taking a public obligation upon yourself. So I think it doesn't, it's not necessarily negating you of your public obligation, but you're taking on the public obligation in a different way. Anderson, we didn't like it was public school system and made the decision to homeschool our children. They both graduated with the University of Alabama, and we never questioned paying our property taxes or any other taxes were levied on us. If we could just get some of the money back, it would be awesome. Josh, Charlemagne started giving peasants education before Napoleon, and my college professor was right. Jeff, buddy, you have to stay away from the statehouse. You're starting to sound like Ali Naaman. Man, I'm telling you, it's just this time of year, and as I get older, the allergy season just wears on me more and more. Sly Dog, you're kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth here. If everyone's obligated to pay into a system to have a minimal, functional society with minimal educated kids in public schools, then why should private school parents not share some of that burden? Because they are taking the burden on themselves. This is not a hard concept. We're not absolving them of their obligation. They are taking an obligation away from you, Sly Dog, to educate their child and taking it upon themselves because not everybody is paying into the system. But they said, we can do it better. We can homeschool. We can send them to private school. And that way the government does not have to spend your tax dollars on our kids. Why is this so hard? They benefit from having a functional society too. I don't know why this is like Chinese mathematics to you guys. My name texture, damn Jeff, you're dead on with the tax break that I spent thousands upon thousands of private schools for five children. I ought to ask myself, why didn't I get changed from a rooster to a hen earlier? Your voice reminds me of the ringside WWE announcer. Unnamed texter. These are handouts that Republicans are getting that is complete garbage. I have one in Fairhope High School. I have one in private school because it is a handout that the state is wasting money on. I said, I don't waste the money. And then Sean telling me I sound like Alex Jones. Well, Alex Jones is a complete nutcase, but he's very successful until he dabbled in the dark arts of Sandy Hook conspiracy theories. But let's see, before I get myself an aneurysm here. If it was going to kids who needed it, it's not. It's a waste of money. But it's not about need. I mean, it is need because everybody needs an education. That's what it is. You would send your kid to a private school regardless, correct? No. I live in Fairhope. We have pretty good public schools here. I think part of this is on your community to have good schools, too. The school boards you elect are very important. And we can get into this whole discussion about school choice, but it's my take on school choice is not a complicated one. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.